Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Some of the struggles that come with going through high school, first up, maybe we start with that. Just you know, just to share a little bit of my own experience from high school, it was I found that I could adapt pretty well between groups. So like I wasn't particularly disliked by a group. I could adapt with them all. So I was liked by like the chess club, but I was also liked by like the more sporty, and I could kind of. And I know the reasons for that. I was very good at this kind of adaptable thing, but that was my approach, was I'm sort of going to float between all these things and be liked by all these different groups, as opposed to like being just in one of those. That was kind of my experience. I'm not, what was yours like, and how did that lead to the work you're doing now?
That's a really good strategy. I love the strategy you have. And going into research, that's actually a really nice strategy, because if something goes awry, you have several places that you feel like you belong. So that actually was, you probably didn't know you were doing this, but that was really cool. You know, for me, high school was actually pretty smooth. So I was one of the rare, you know, teens that actually had like two good friends, and we maintained that friendship all the way, you know, through high school and into college. And, you know, we're still in touch, not as close, but now that I, you know, have kids and I work with kids, I know that's actually pretty rare. Actually, the norm is a lot more change, and that change starts earlier on. And so that's, you know, my first book is actually all about friendships. And then my second book is more about the, in the United States, we call it middle school. This phase, it's the preteens. It's really goes from like 11 to 14 before you're really into high school. And that tends to be a phase of a lot of change and discomfort, and, you know, navigating social stuff is really tricky. So I wanted to dive into that and unpack that, because I feel like there's a lot of social skills that we gain in that stage, you know, and sometimes we gain them really well and healthy ways. And then we also get into some really unhealthy patterns and thought patterns too in that stage. So I'd love to really talk about that, because, you know, the skills that we learn over the course of our lives in relationship impact us forever, our friendships forever, our partnerships forever, you know, and it's an ongoing thing. We're always learning. We're always learning how to be in relation with others, and we're learning about ourselves. So that always fascinates me. So I write for kids so that, you know, I can talk about this and other things to help them learn how to navigate this, because let's face it, you know, relationships are complicated. So the more we know about them and us, and, you know, skills to help us in our relationships, you know, the better off we're going to be.
Yeah, it's quite a treacherous journey in a way, learning how to navigate them and hold on to true friendships and distinguish between, call it, closer or truer connections and more broader ones that maybe don't have as much of that kind of authentic connection between them. It's difficult terrain. So it's awesome that you're kind of prepping kids for that.
Yeah. You know, and so what got me started was, you know, when my kids were in this like preteen years, and just kind of watching their struggles and their social lives, I got really curious and I wanted to research that. And that started a friendship program. And I wondered, what happens if I start talking to young people about some of these things we've learned over the course of our lives? I call them friendship truths. I thought, what if we start talking to younger people about some of these friendship truths as they're going through it, you know, so they don't have to learn, you know, some of the hard lessons we learn. We're all going to learn those. But what if, you know, we start earlier? So one of the friendship truths that I found was such a relief for kids, and this applies, you know, throughout our lives, is, you know, friendships have different phases and change over time. So when we're in those preteen years and we're feeling, you know, a lack of confidence and maybe a little more vulnerable about who we are, when those friendships change, just knowing that that's normal, you know, my hope is that that allows kids to know, actually, okay, it might not be me. This is how relationships work sometimes. So that kind of lifted the weight off them to realize, oh, this is actually normal. You know, so friendships do change over time. And my best friend in fourth grade might not be my best friend at all in, you know, my first year of high school. And that feels really weird, you know, because we were close at one time, but that's really normal. So normalizing these things for kids will help them navigate in a way that's kinder to themselves and also kinder to other people.
It's a dynamic thing. It's not a static thing, a friendship.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to try and instill an awareness around that, to know that the change is okay, that there may be some ups and downs and lefts and rights.
Yeah. And to touch on what you said is that, you know, another friendship truth is our healthiest friendships feel safe and accepting. And you touched on that. And so helping, you know, kids and teens and adults know that some of our relationships have that really special quality where they feel a lot more safe and accepting. And we should note that, you know, these are the friendships, the relationships that we really want to put our energy in. But it doesn't mean that those that don't feel like that are not good, because they actually are okay too. And that's actually much more the norm. A lot of our friendships don't actually feel super safe, I guess. And so we know that we're not maybe going to share our deepest feelings and emotions with this person, you know, but, you know, we might be, you know, coworkers with them. We might be on the same team with them, you know, so helping kids understand this too, that there's different kinds of friendship and they're not all going to feel the same, but keep an eye out for the ones that do feel, you know, really safe and accepting.
So that's another truth.
Yeah.
What are a few others?
A few others. One that's really helpful for kids and adults is, you know, we all have different skills. And then, you know, layer on top of that, you know, we're all different neurologically. Some of us are neurotypical, some of us are neurodiverse. So there's so many differences in us. So knowing that too. So how we relate to each other is gonna differ based on that, just our own skills and who we are as people. So that opens the door to just realizing, hey, you know, we're all going to go about this a little bit differently, and we all have different interests and skills. So again, you know, just kind of laying the foundation so that people can be, again, more gentle with themselves and with others in relationship.
It's kind of a pecking order in the schoolyard sometimes as well. And I remember as kids, just like, Often kids will maybe have a certain behavior to try and that has a different kind of motive. Like they might actually like the person, so they start teasing them to get the attention. But on face value, it's like, oh, why is this kid teasing me? So I don't know how easy it is for kids at that stage to kind of, you know, they're probably not gonna maybe get to the underlying stuff, but those behaviors are interesting, because often it's like, well, you know, it's counterintuitive, but, you know, the child teases the other child to actually get their attention or something.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of that is, again, maybe that child hasn't learned how to connect in healthy ways yet, you know, so they might be modeling something that they're seeing, you know, they really do want to connect with that person, but they don't quite have the skills or the words to connect in a way that's going to help and actually connect with that person. So you know, this is a skill that we learn too, how to connect in healthy ways rather than, you know, in ways that are divisive. And so that takes practice. But what I found working with kids is they get it. They understand what it feels like to be on the receiving end. And sometimes we just need to help them with the awareness and words and skills of, you know, how do I connect with this person in a way that actually, you know, feels positive and like a connection and not, you know, not dividing things. I mean, there's also some really interesting stuff going on in the preteen years, especially when it comes to, you know, I'll put this in quotes, popularity. I don't know if you've come across this, Daniel, with, you know, your son or anything, but popularity becomes more important. But what's interesting in the preteen years is there's different types of popularity. And it takes a while for kids to kind of navigate the scene and figure it out. But there's a researcher in the United States called Dr. Mitch Prinstein. He actually wrote a book called Popular. And in these early preteen, early adolescent years, some people are popular because they're generally well-liked. You know, they're leaders, they inspire people, you know, people actually look up to them. And then there's another type of popularity that he terms status. And these are, you know, young people that might have more influence on the group. People are a little afraid of them. You know, they don't want to get on their wrong side. So there's a power differential there. But they're both, these are called popular. You know, so what I like to talk to kids and teens about is, you know, what kind of, when we're talking about somebody, what are we actually talking about here? Are we talking about someone who's inspiring and inclusive and communicates well and brings out the best in people? Or are we talking about somebody that actually doesn't, you know, might have the opposite effect? So helping kids even understand the lay of that land so they can navigate that, you know, in the best way possible. Somewhere around, you know, year 4, 5, 6, depending on each kid, there's a shift that happens developmentally where in their relationships, it's not primarily based on play. So in those younger years, relationships are based on play and proximity. You know, who's in your class? Who is out, you know, playing at the same time you are? Then there's this shift that happens in those preteen years where they're starting to look for deeper levels of connection, shared interests. So he's actually right at the right age to actually be looking for some different things, possibly in friendships. But for some kids who aren't quite there yet, you know, they're getting maybe thrust right into that because they're with a lot older students at that point in time. But I could see why maybe they made that transition during those years. He's doing good. How is he doing with his social world and all that?
It's been a pretty smooth transition, which is good because it's kind of confronting, as you'd know, for a parent, it all happens so fast. So the transitions, it's a very music focused. He's very much into music and stuff. So that's very cool. But I think we've got a lot to learn ourselves from kids in terms of their presence. You know, they're always very present with what they're doing. And it's sort of like if things don't make sense to them, they kind of call it straight away. Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, why would you want to be, you know, you see, it restores your faith in the good as well, because they just naturally, you know, they want what they hold little mirrors to us.
Yes.
I've always just you know, when all the children are thrown in one, I've found this a little challenging in terms of when all the kids are thrown into one pot, how do you account for the individual within that? And also, as you're saying, how do you develop friendship circles if you're quite introverted? And there's so many different aspects to it. But yeah, this, how do we cater for the individual, I guess?
Yeah. And what resources are there? You know, so it's like, I've got two daughters in high school now, and I know for them, it's really important that the school has a lot of clubs and activities for all sorts of diverse interests. And one thing they do really well is really encourage kids to plug into those, because it is important, especially during the preteen and the teen years, for young people to find people that they feel like they have some things in common with, that they can really share some shared interests. So that's one thing that schools can do and parents can do to encourage their kids to find those you know, other students that have those like interests. So your son is probably interested in other people that are into music. And that's really important for him to talk about that and find people that share that passion with him. So that's one thing that parents can do. And your kids are also finding these connections online. So you know, my third book is about phones and tech. And, you know, that's not all negative. There's some kids are finding their people and, you know, exploring their interests, you know, through their phones and online.
It's interesting. I'm glad you haven't framed it in a complete the negative sense, because it is a challenge. It is a real challenge, and so bringing it to devices, it fascinates me. I'm not sure what the science behind it is, but you know, like a very small child or even a baby, they go to the light of the phone like it's sugar, like it's a like they just I don't know what it is with us as humans, but they go for the screen. Very small, you know, and it must just be the light and the stimulation, and like I said at the start, I think this is a real struggle and challenge for many families in how the strategies around these devices. I've also found at times you can kind of get stuck on device loop. So your child might be you get them off one screen, and then they're they're on the TV. And then by the time they finish that, then and you're sort of like, okay, they're not on that screen. That's good. But then all of a sudden they're on a different type of device. So yeah, what are your like kind of key strategies around that?
Oh, you know, this is like the topic of the time for parents right now, because, you know, we are parenting now in the digital age, and these screens are not going away. And what I found, so my third book is called The Phone Book, and I wrote this for preteens that are about to get their phones, and did a ton of research on that. And here's what I found. Here's what was the most interesting to me is, and like you mentioned, you know, the reason we go to these devices, because they're designed in a way to draw our attention in. So this is called persuasive design. It's intentional. So there's all sorts of things that are designed within phones to keep us engaged. You know, for instance, maybe we're getting tagged, we're getting notifications, you know, the videos are short and they're colorful and they're moving fast, you know, so there's so much to draw our attention in. So what I like to start with, in fact, this is chapter one of my book, is, you know, why tech companies want us staring at our screens. You know, so I am very aware of the fact that these are not going away. So we now, as parents and as, you know, as kids in the world, we need to learn, you know, how these things work, so then we can use them in more positive, powerful ways. So, you know, chapter one is why tech companies want you staring at your screen. And I talk about persuasive design, you know, and how technology is designed to really pull us in and keep our attention there, and what the business model behind that is. So the business model is advertising. So we need to know that too, that our time spent on screen directly translate to profits for big tech companies. So I start there, because I think it's really important for kids to understand that, and they find it fascinating too. They you know, once they start to realize, oh, I see how this works. I see now that, you know, Snapchat streaks are the perfect way to keep us, you know, going back to our screens and feeding this business model. No, it's not all of a sudden going to make them not wanting to use their screens, you know, because let's face it, screens are pretty amazing, but they're more aware consumers. So that's where I start, is let's talk about how these devices work, and how that impacts our day-to-day life. And the other key thing that I found is, I feel like we are very much at the beginning of putting guardrails in place for young people. We're not there yet, especially in the United States. This all evolved so fast that, you know, much faster than regulations and lawmakers could possibly keep up with. So my hope for the future is that we're going to have a lot better guardrails in place for kids, so that kids aren't drawn in for hours on end, so that kids aren't losing sleep because they can't get off their devices. You know, so there are things that can be done to make them a little less addictive, to maybe put some, you know, timelines in place to make sure content is more age appropriate. So I'm hopeful that we're going to get there, but we're not there yet. But the discussions are happening. I know in every country around the world, the discussions are happening. And finally, in the United States, two laws made it out of committee, you know, into discussion to finally start protecting some privacy for kids.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yeah, it's kind of the Wild West.
Yes.
Yeah, but I think that's an awesome way to start, actually, is to try and get that awareness around the engine. The engine behind the model behind it, so that children are aware of what the motive of these companies and so on is, and then they're in a better position to start making choices around that, which impacts their screen use, as opposed to just being caught on it and not understanding any of the bigger picture and the why around it. So I think it's cool that you've really started with that.
Yeah. And, you know, these are fun conversations for families. So even just, you know, at the dinner table noticing, hey, have you ever noticed that you are shopping for something and then all of a sudden you're seeing ads for the same product all over the place? You know, why do you think that is? You know, so I love to just throw out the questions to get their wheels spinning about, oh, because my data is being shared. And you know, so understanding all of this is super important, you know, especially since we're all spending so much time on our screens.
Yeah, we sort of took the approach that if he has his first phone, my son, but to keep the stuff on it as minimal as possible. Mm-hmm. But the classic thing with that is the very limited stuff he has on there, he has like absolutely mastered those apps beyond belief. Like he's found it's pretty crazy. Like he's found stuff about those, you know, those very limited. Our approach is, you know, don't give too much, keep it very simple. But even when keeping it simple, he has like found every aspect of that app. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so I've given up on, you know, trying to keep up with my kids and their technology. So they're the ones that are the expert, you know, and we as parents are trying to keep up, which is why it's so important just to have these conversations all the time and not in a judgmental way, you know, not condescending and always cutting down technology, but coming from curiosity, because kids and teens have a lot to teach us too. You know, and once we open that door and if they feel like they can talk to us about stuff, they'll share some really, you know, sometimes really tricky things that they're dealing with online or, you know, not great things they're seeing online. So as much as we can as adults and parents is, you know, try to keep that conversation open because they have a lot to teach us about this world that we're not even seeing.
Mm. So do you use a lot of illustrations in your books as well?
Yes, yeah. So it is illustrated all throughout just to make it fun and engaging. And so, you know, I was writing this, I thought, you know, what kid is going to want to read a book about phones? Phones don't even come with instruction manuals anymore, you know. So I knew I had to make this super informative too. So it's filled with illustrations and quizzes and humor and fun facts, like lots of fun phone facts too, because kids love to learn about that as well. So I did try to intentionally make it as engaging as possible, but touching on all the important things that we do want kids to know. So you know, it's important for kids to actually understand that, you know, stranger danger, of course, happens online, and what to do if they come across some cyberbullying, or and how to differentiate that against something that's super common called digital drama, you know, and talking about social media and talking about FOMO. So I wanted to talk about all these topics too, because ideally, you know, before any kid gets a connected device, that they're communicating with their peers. They understand this. They understand a lot of these things so they can navigate in safer ways.
It's very obviously very new territory. It wasn't what kids' books were about in the 60s or.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it is. And it's, you know, it's a different approach to trying to get information out there. But what I, and selfishly what I wanted to do when I wrote this, my kids were, one was a preteen and one was an early teen, is I wanted to know all the stuff that they should know. Like, so I was, as a parent, I wrote this as a parent, and thinking, okay, what do I really want my kids to know as they're about to enter this online world? So I touch on all those topics, and hopefully that'll, you know, guide parents too in a lot of these conversations. Because as we touched on, Daniel, sometimes we don't even know the questions to ask, you know, because kids are using technology in such a different way. I mean, it really is the center of their social world in many ways. You know, it's their primary communication vehicle, and, you know, they're being fed so much information. And I'm curious what's happening in Germany with phones in schools. How are schools managing that?
The issue here is that it kind of takes a long time to catch. Like, Germany's progressive in a lot of ways, but also a little bit slow to get up to speed because there's so many kind of old ways of doing things. So they do, but it just takes a long time. So I know they are having classes around you know, online awareness and things, but it's all, like you said earlier, it's all in the early stages. But the thing is, it's happening and changing so rapidly and so fast, like we said, it's almost like the education system has to keep up at that rate as well, I think. Like, it really, it really should be top priority. And I mean, you know, my fear is, as much as you can influence your own children, as soon as they're out there in the schoolyard and you know, you're protecting them from their phone, but, you know, the influence of another child who may not have the same level of security or protection on their phone, then immediately all your kind of work is undone. But I mean, kind of in life, there's so many things like that, where once they're out, it's sort of like sink or swim in a way, you know? So
just the best we can do to prepare them, you know. And I feel like in the United States, there's all sorts of different things happening with, you know, rules around phones in schools. You know, some schools are seeing what happens if they totally embrace them. So, you know, kids have phones in the classroom, and that sometimes goes okay, but there's always students that are, you know, in the back of the classroom and very distracted. And some schools have taken the other approach where they've totally banned them, you know, from being in school or even in the classroom at all. So I feel like we're testing it out here to trying to figure out the best approach. And just, yeah, figuring out as we go. And it's messy. And as we talked about, it's a wild, wild west. And I don't have the solution here. I wish I did. You know, we're just trying to figure this out, because I know, you know, it's a different world, and these devices are not going away. But I don't know, you know, where is the right place to put some rules and boundaries in place so that kids can still learn and can still interact with each other in person and face to face and chat with each other. You know, one telling thing, when one of my daughters was starting high school and she was, you know, a few months in, I said, "Hey, have you met anybody new?" And she said, "Oh no, everybody's just staring at their phones." And I thought, wow, okay, so that's a huge shift from when I was in high school, where you had those awkward moments where you're sitting next to somebody new, and then at some point somebody talked to somebody, and then next thing you know, you're chatting with each other. So it's a different scene out there with how kids are connecting.
Yeah, it's crazy. We also do have a responsibility as adults in a way of our own behavior. Like, I know my boy observes my every move, and if he sees me just doom scrolling constantly, I'm setting an example there. So I've tried to be very conscious of the example I set in terms of my own device usage.
Yes. Yes, for sure. Absolutely. I agree 100%. And now that I've got a driver now, and someone who's learning to drive, and, you know, knowing that was coming years ago, you know, I do not touch my phone in my car. You know, they're watching me. So I cannot, you know, my phone is away. It's in my purse. I'm not looking at my phone. I'm not, you know, touching my phone. So all these little things teach our kids how to use their phones. So yeah, you're absolutely right with that.
Yeah, just a question for you. What's your like writing process? Do you have a kind of regimented writing process with your books or?
Yeah, it starts with an idea. It starts with something I really am super curious about because, you know, it takes years. As you know, you wrote a book too, right, Daniel? Mm-hmm. So it takes years. So I start with something I really, really am curious about. And then I dive into research. And there's a lot of research, especially when it comes to phones. It's a lot of it's new and a lot of it doesn't agree with, you know, one study disagrees with another study, but I started there and then I create an outline typically. And write from that outline. So I'm a much more structured writer than somebody that just kind of starts from, you know, beginning to end. I go into it pretty methodically, and then always have kid beta readers that, you know, really help me understand where I've got it right or, you know, what doesn't connect with them as readers. So that's a big part of the process too.
Well, I think it's genuinely really important. And I think I am definitely going to read the phone book with my son because I've just realized talking to you that we've read a lot of amazing kids books, but we haven't really sat there and gone through any that is so up. You know, there's amazing ones around bullying and diversity and many things, but I haven't actually read one with him about this exact topic of devices. And we talk about it a lot, the devices, and So yeah, that's very cool.
Well, good. I hope it prompts, you know, some really good conversations. That's what my hope was. You know, I wrote it for kids, but I was my private hope was that their parents might read it too, because, you know, it'll prompt conversations about what is their experience. So there's all sorts of vignettes in the book about kids and adults, you know, some do making some big mistakes, some doing amazing, awesome things. So, you know, all those can prompt discussions about what they've seen and what they're experiencing, you know, in their world. And, you know, just like friendships, kids are navigating this in very different ways. You know, some kids are so deeply into social media. Some kids, you know, they're social media, but they're into other things online. So they're navigating this in their own ways too. So it's great for us as caregivers and parents to know how is our kid navigating this? You know, what do they love? Where do they love to spend their time? And do they notice that sometimes when they're spending time in these other places or maybe a certain app that it actually doesn't feel so great, you know, and then how do they deal with that? You know, how are they navigating their own behaviors and their own emotions with these devices? So there's so much great stuff to talk about there and to really get to know our kids, because so much of their life is playing out online.
Do you have a challenge? It's a tradition on the show that you might like to offer the listeners. It could be just relative to our discussion now, or I mean, we've talked about some of the social stuff. We've also talked about the device stuff. Is there anything that springs to mind?
Well, since we're talking about phones and our digital lives, let's start there. So a challenge might be, you know, notice your daily life and notice if you've given up something or some things because it's been replaced by time you're spending on your screen. So, you know, just taking a stock of, you know, where do you really want to be spending your time? You know, one of my daughters, is way into TikTok sometimes, but when she doesn't have to be, she signs off. So for instance, you know, she noticed that she used to love reading books, but in the teen world, sometimes knowing what the trends are in TikTok are really important connection point for peers. But in the summer, that doesn't matter, you know, because we're not in school here. She doesn't need to stay up on trends and she can actually sign off TikTok and get back to reading. So that's a great example for all of us. Like, so what, you know, what are we letting go of, or what have we actually, you know, maybe unconsciously let go of because we're spending so much time on this device that we want to bring back into our lives? And how can we make that happen? How can we create the space and time to bring some of those other activities that really bring us joy back into our lives?
That's very cool. Yeah, taking stock of it. I've noticed whenever I've taken like stock of something and actually started to monitor it, whether it even be like a dietary thing or whatever, it isn't until I've started to like monitor it that I've made like realizations. So yeah. what you're suggesting there is awesome, because you're not saying try and just use the phone less, you know. It's much more specific in that it's like try and be aware of what time is going into where and what has been sacrificed. And if it's something you want to bring back, like you say, reading, or, you know, try and find the space to bring that back in. So it's a much more integrative approach. So that's a good one.
Yeah. And you know, something I'm working on is I was really dedicated with a morning, you know, mindfulness and meditation practice. And then I started getting into this habit of reading the news, yeah, waking up and starting to read the news. And I lost that habit. It just went away. And so now I'm working, you know, very intentionally to bring that back. You know, do not pick up the phone and start reading the news until this other thing that you really want to do happens. So, you know, it took me realizing, oh my gosh, I have fallen out of that habit. And that was really important to me, and making the time and the space to get back to that.
Same deal here, actually. And it's a real, you can literally just check your phone for one thing and go down a rabbit hole of like craziness. So it's, yeah. You think you're just going to check one text, the next thing you know, it's like been 45 minutes. And if you added that time up cumulatively over a year, it'd be the minutes would be pretty phenomenal. So bringing an awareness to that's really yes. important, as we've said. Where can people find you and the book?
The easiest place to find me is my website, which is jessicaspeer.com. And that has links off to all my socials. And the book is available anywhere books are sold. I'm not sure about Germany, but it is available most places. So I do have some links on my website, places you can buy the book. And I often write about this topic on my website and other topics just to help families connect and thrive, because we have so many distractions these days that we do have to really work to find connection with each other and, you know, and get some habits and patterns in place at home so that we are, like you said, not modeling that we're staring at our screens all the time either. You know, so we are connecting with our kids and putting the phone down and pausing and listening and really connecting.
Well, it's very important in terms of shaping the next generation and, yeah, so it's really, really progressive and important work you're doing. And yeah, I'm really, really grateful for all the insights you've shared around it.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for having me and everything you're doing to help all of us keep growing and learning. You know, so you are an inspiration too of everything you're putting out there. So thank you, Daniel.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.